reading from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Part 3, verse 9. Tadapi bahir angam nirbijasya. That even these are external limbs in relationship to seedless samadhi. This sutra indicates that dharana, gyan, and conventional samadhi, although internal when compared to the first five limbs of yoga, are themselves considered external by here in relation to the highest type of samadhi known as nirbij. Even the last three limbs involve focusing the mind on an object. Of course, both the mind itself and all its objects are prakriti, and therefore external from the perspective of purusha. Nirbij samadhi comes about only when all eight limbs of yoga have reached their conclusion, says Vyas. There are thus three subdivisions in the path of yoga outlined by Patanjali in these sutras. The first five limbs are indirect or preparatory causes of sampragata samadhi. The three remaining limbs are direct causes of sampragata samadhi. And finally, the ultimate goal is a sampragata samadhi. Om jnana kimarandasya jnanam jnana kavasaya. Yadvaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Houston. I'm on my way to Austin to visit some of our Sangha members, Ekachakra Nityaseva Mahamuni and his wife Nittai family, and also there's a Ram Vijay, used to be in Albany, so I'm stopping here in Houston the people here had asked me to come several times when they met me in Vrindavan, and I have close relationships with them as they are. I used to come here when Tamal Krishnamaraj was here, and they are mutual affection. So nice. So we're continuing the kind of, this is the end discussion of the final anga of Ashtanga Yoga, which is Samadhi. And it was divided up into internal and external. The first five angas are really engaging so much directly with the body and the mind to become detached from the body and the mind, which is the purpose of yoga. It's inspirational in many ways. I know even when I was sitting in the airport or waiting on the line to, you know, get on the plane, you know, I had this realization, you know, I'm on a yogic path and I should control my mind. by meditating on the holy name. So what's being described here is that it was divided into external and internal, up to pratyahara, which is dealing with aloofment from the senses, but dealing more with the senses. So when you come to the stage of pratyahara, that's the last kind of dealing with the senses. One second. It's the last dealing with the senses. And then you get to these very, very concentrated stages of meditation. So it's more of an internal thing. Asana is to make you sthira and sukha, steady and comfortable with the body. Pranayama is dealing further with controlling the mind. And it gets to the depth of becoming aloof from the senses, pratyahara. And then you go into this internal meditational path. Dharana, dhyan, and samadhi, which is a progressive stage of concentration. At dharana, you're meditating, but the meditation is not steady. If there's an external object of attraction, you can be allured away from your meditation. But at dhyana, it's eka ganata. There's just one thing imprinted in your mind, and that's the object of your meditation. And therefore, even if there's a object of attraction at dhyana, unlike dharana, it won't allure you. And then samadhi, the internalization of that meditation even becomes so much deeper. It's described that Bodhiraj reminds us that there are threefold aspects of knowledge: the object itself, the name of the object, and the idea of the object in the person's mind. But in samadhi, the later two are eliminated. In other words, the name of the object, the eye of the object, it's just that, we went over this in the first chapter, it's just the experience of the object itself. At least this is the school of yoga. Not even a conception of idea of it, just the pure experience of the object itself. Exclusively, no mental recognition of what the object is. The object is raw, uninterrupted presence now constitutes the yogi's entire universe of experience. And the example was introduced as a pure crystal. The crystal takes on the color of the rose to the extent that you can't distinguish the crystal from the rose. So meditation at samadhi has reached such a height that the yogi is no longer self-aware even. He's only aware of the object of meditation. So so this has been described, how at dharana, as one is detached from the senses, it's all an internal working. But here, it describes but even these, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, are external in relationship to seedless samadhi. If you remember at the beginning, the first chapter, samadhi was described extensively, and there were two divisions of samadhi, a saprajata and saprajata samadhi. And saprajata samadhi was sub-each. You're in samadhi, but you're still engaging the mind in the meditation, where near beach samadhi is when the soul is imbibing its own nature. It becomes self-aware. It doesn't need an instrument to become aware. The mind is an instrument. And in samadhi and in yoga, the first samadhi is that the mind becomes sattva in its pure nature of being, which is straight and clean. The instrument can reflect perfectly the soul, but then the soul becomes aware of itself without any support. So even these three internal limbs, when you compare dharana, dhyana, samadhi, when you compare it to near beach samadhi, they are still external limbs because they're dependent on something external to itself for the perception of itself. So this is what's being described now. We discussed this extensively because the first chapter is meditative absorption. It described the seven stages of samadhi. And the first six stages were sampragata. It was a deep meditational state, but still dependent on the mind. And then the seventh stage, the soul is aware of itself purely without any anything external to aid its perception. So it's finishing the Ashtanga Yoga. And as you remember, these stages, Dharana, Dhyan, Samadhi, were called, what is that word? They're called samyana because it's going to be brought up in the rest of the chapter is going to be when you come to this stage of concentration on a particular part of the body, what is the mystic revelation that happens? So rather than repeat them all again, now the yogi is going to do dharana, dhyana, samadhi because he has to do three. It's kind of like a meditation that it's like a focus on a camera. Every time you focus, you're staring at the object, but you start a little blurry and it becomes a little bit more concentrated. So there's a maturity of focus. So this was called samyama. And generally, it was described that it's a progressive process. And of course, described from this samyama, this deep, deep meditation, insight comes. Whereas as the mind is becoming more and more focused, that means what the mind is coming more and more to sattva, then this meditational process which controls the vrittis and moves the mind to its pure state. It's just like an instrument when it's in its original, when it's designed according to original creation before it rusts, before it becomes distorted, it functions better. Well, the function of the mind is discrimination. So when the mind is in its pure state at this stage of samyama, when the meditation becomes very deep, it develops a tremendous insight. That's the purpose of the yoga process. And what's the insight? The insight is to see clearly. And what is it seeing clearly? It's seeing clearly the distinction between the soul and matter. That is Gyan. That is the process of analysis. The process of analysis is the process of having a clear perception of the difference between the soul and the body. That's the end. To have that perception, you have to practice vairagya. You have to stop identifying and following the attachments of the mind, which fortify the distortion of the instrument of the mind and fortify the lack of discrimination. So this is the whole purpose of the yogic process, to develop insight. And that insight comes when ceasing to act as the body and mind, we purify the body and mind. And the body and mind, the body comes to the platform where one could perceive itself. Now, in the commentaries, it describes that usually the process is progressive to get to this stage of insight, but it gives some exceptions, and the exceptions are when that insight has been developed in a previous life, then one doesn't have to go through the stages, the progressive stages. One can just begin on the meditative stage. Well, generally, it's not possible. And the example, one of the examples was Sishupal, because of course they were Vijay and Vijay. They were great devotees, and somehow or other, they had to come to this world. And they developed enmity towards Krishna. It was something very deeply rooted. This concept of samskara is so attachments in the mind. And you can have attachments for, and this is going to be discussed further on, you can have detachments for enjoyment, or you can have attachments for renunciation. So it's very interesting because it's so clear that there are certain attachments that we have that are not based on this life. It's so clear that, and you see that in children, we can see that in us, in nature. So, so the purpose of this, so they say, describes Sishupal. He had enmity, but that enmity was for Krishna, and therefore he was absorbed in Krishna. He didn't have to undergo yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. He was completely absorbed. And the other example is Jodhabharata. In his previous life, he attained a high yogic position, and somehow he, in his meditational process, he somehow saw a deer that lost its mother, and he became absorbed in taking care of the deer to such an extent he forgot his self-purificatory meditational processes. Then he died and was born as a deer, and as a deer he goes to the ashram of sages because he still has that samskara, that attraction, because he was at, it was Bhat Maharaj at the stage of Bhavat, a very, very high stage. So those impressions were still there, even in the animal body. And he went and he stayed near the hermitage. Just like there's one friend I have, I visited, it's at Shastra. And there's a bird that's just banging on the window to get in. And it just crashes into this window. And every year you come back, that same bird, some connection to that place. I don't know, maybe it was born in that place and then took, you know, reincarnation, took birth as a bird. Somehow this deer was still attracted, had the samskara. And then his next life, he's born a Jeddah Bharat. So he still had the samskara for renunciation. So even though his father tried to train him and teach him in the rules and regulations, because he wanted nothing to do with this world, he acted contrary. That's called abadut. It's a certain type of evolved soul that doesn't follow the rules and regulations and is shunned socially, but is doing it for the purpose of not getting entangled in the world. Very frankly, we are entangled in the world because of our desires, and we can't artificially renounce those desires. We have to work through them. But if we actually were free from those desires, we wouldn't have any duties. We can take sannyas, we can leave the forest, we can do what we want. But some people, they're so advanced that they are so apprehensive of getting caught in the social mechanisms of the world that they act in contrary ways so that they'll be rejected. It's a very high state. And that was Bharat Maharaj. But he was self-realized. He was meditating. So it gives the example, in the past life, someone may have already attained this. And because in the past life they may have attained this very high level of meditation, they don't need to go through the process. But the point that's being showed is that real yoga means the meditational absorption on the object, and all the other practices are meant to get us to that point, which is why kirtan is so effective. See, in the path of bhakti, you immediately start with the meditation on the object and the reciprocation and devotion and the absorption and the music and the kirtan. Kirtan is such a thing that even if the senses are uncontrolled, the mind is uncontrolled, and it goes to the senses because the senses are absorbed in the object of meditation, which is the sound vibration. Even someone with a mind that's not controlled, by the nature of music and by the nature of the total absorption of that experience in the mantra, then someone can attain a very, very high level of absorption. But now, in this verse, it says, well, generally, the first five limbs are considered to be external, and the three, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, samyama, is internal. Compared to near beach samadhi, then those three last limbs of Ashtanga Yoga are also external because they're depending on the mind. And near beach samadhi is just dependent on the kusha, the soul itself. Now, the state of restraint, this is the next verse, nirodha, is when there is disappearance of outgoing samskaras and the appearance of restraining samskaras. These emerge in the mind at the moment of restraint. Very interesting verse. Jitana Narodha Shamskaryo Abhibhava Pradibhavo Narodhakshana Chitanvayo Narodha Parinama. So, so he talks about the stage of restraint, where you're controlling the outgoing samskaras. What are the outgoing samskaras? Are the samskaras of ignorance, attachment, aversion, I want to enjoy. So this nirodha, this chitta vritti nirodha, the cessation of the mind, means disappearance of the outgoing samskaras. Just imagine how peaceful your mind would be if you could restrain the vitara, the outgoing, the emerging samskaras. So this chitti vritti nirodha, when you're stopping, there's a disappearance of the outgoing and the appearance of the restraining samskaras. What are the restraining samskaras? when you want to do something that you don't want to do, and there's something in your mind that gives you an attachment or impetus, no, I should not do this. Or we can even see in our mind the challenges that we have day by day. Should I do this or not? And the successful yogi, the successful bhakta, the successful spiritual practitioner is controlling the restraining the outgoing samskaras. And if you're not, you're immersing yourself more and more in ignorance. If you're surfing the web uncontrollably, if you're watching TV without restraint, whatever it is. If you're not able to restrain them or have no desire to restrain them, you're not a successful yogi. A successful yogi has very powerful samskaras of restraint, very powerful desires based on knowledge and understanding that I should control these. Now, an interesting point comes out, because generally we consider that yoga means when the mind becomes stilled. But it's described here that there are restraining samskaras. So that's still a fluctuation of prakriti, a fluctuation of matter, the impressions. So it's very nice. It's described, if the mind, like all prakriti products, is by its very metaphysical nature, constantly in motion and changing because of the ever-shifting gunas that constitute it, how is it possible to still the mind? This would seem to be inherently impossible to still the mind, because there are also gunas that shift for restraint. The mind is made of samskaras, and Vyas, following Patanjali in this sutra, divides these into two basic types. Uttan, outgoing samskaras that propel the mind in any kind of activity, and Nirodha, restraining samskaras, which are activated in meditation and restrain the outgoing samskaras. Patanjali is now providing more detailed and subtle information as to the mechanics underpinning the state of citta vritti niroha that he establishes the goal of yoga. So yoga is defined as restraining the mind. Now he's explaining it in a little bit more detail, that restraint is a samskara itself. There's a struggle going on, but by the practice and detachment of a spiritual practitioner, his restraining samskaras have become more powerful than the outgoing samskaras, and they're able to rein them in. Specifically, Nirodha is attained by Nirodha samskaras. So to have this quelling of the mind, it happens by samskaras or impressions in the mind that are very much impelling one to restrain the mind. According to the psychology of samadhi, when the mind sets about meditating, what actually occurs in this samadhi meditation is that a restraining set of samskaras, that I should control my senses, that enjoyment is, material enjoyment is against yoga, whatever, those become prominent. So according to psychology, yogi sets about meditating, what is occurring is restraining Nirodha set of samskaras being cultivated to suppress the normal flow of mundane thought. Thus, when the mind is active and roaming about as in normal consciousness, the restraining samskaras are latent and therefore absent. And when the restraining samskaras are active and dominant, the outgoing ones are being suppressed. So it means that the restraining samskaras, you can think in your mind, when the impetus of self-discipline comes, checking the impetus for self-indulgence, there's some scars. And what yoga means is that those some scars are predominant. The idea is that there's always an ongoing dynamic between these two, and therefore when the mind is restrained in meditation, there's a tussle between the restraining samskaras and others, and consequently ongoing movement, although imperceptible to the meditator. So the mind is quelled, but what's really happening is the force of outgoing samskaras are quelled by the force of the restraining samskara. In other words, on a metaphysical level, there is always movement in prakriti, however subtle, even when the mind appears to be completely restrained and fixed. So therefore, at every moment of meditation, there is a suppression of the latent outgoing samskaras and strengthening of the restraining samskaras that are performing this task of suppression. Tasya prasanta vahita samskara. The mind's undisturbed flow occurs due to samskaras. So this yoga occurs due to samskaras. When one becomes proficient in cultivating the restraining samskaras, says the commentator, the mind can then flow peacefully in meditation without disturbance. Here it's described vahita, flow, the mind's undisturbed flow. There's a flow of restraining samskaras. Okay, are there any questions? Anybody just like to say hello? I kind of been traveling since 7 in the morning, so I was able to read on the plane and a little bit here, but that's what I prepared. Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Govardhan.
Hare Krishna Govardhan, I got your letter about visiting and doing a program there. I'll get back to you soon. Thank you. Gail, you there?
Yes. Can I still ask a question?
Yeah, please, Gail. I need questions.
Yeah,
I'm finishing up this section. I really think I don't know how relevant it will be to after this to just go over all the mystic. So I'm really meditating on this class and then thinking of moving it up, because one thing I get sometimes real tired at 9 o'clock at night. Of course, it's 8 o'clock at night here, but go ahead.
Well, you know, there's always Radha Krishna Lila, but
There is. But initially, this class, I started a little bit for, some people who are into yoga. And Gail, on Sunday, I did this class, it was, in Connecticut, and it was so edifying. They actually, the yoga studio was very, and, a lot of people, some from all over, have visited me in Vrindavan that weren't perhaps direct practitioners of bhakti, and they came from New York, and they came from Connecticut and different places, and there's about 35, 36 people. It was so nice. And, a lot of those people, some of them a few of them download these classes. But I'm thinking deeply, maybe Ras Lila or something like that. No, okay, Gail,
something
go ahead.
Like that.
Go ahead.
I came across, it's just a short two-line thing in the Gita.
Where
Prabhupada describes sampragyatak samadhi and asampragyatak samadhi.
Yeah.
And Can I just read those two lines real quick? Because I was having trouble reconciling his description with yours. Okay. So he says that, you know, there are two kinds of samadhi, sampragyata samadhi and asampragyata samadhi.
Yeah.
When one becomes situated in the transcendental position by various philosophical researches, he is said to have achieved sampragyata samadhi. In the asampragyata samadhi, there is no longer any connection with mundane pleasure. For one is then
I'm actually giving a class now by phone, but I'll be finished, Shamsundar, in about a minute or two. If you want, you could sit. I'm going to answer a question. Nice to see you. Yes. Just over there. You can sit in the chair. Okay, go ahead, Gail. Yeah.
Yeah. So he said, when one becomes situated in the transcendental position by various philosophical researches, he is said to have achieved sampragyata samadhi. In the asampragyata samadhi, there is no longer any connection with mundane pleasure, for one is then transcendental to all sorts of happiness derived from the senses.
Yeah.
And so when I read that, you know, it made it sound as though, you know, in asampragyata samadhi, there's no longer any connection with mundane pleasure. So that seems to imply that in sampragyata samadhi, there may still be some connection with mundane pleasure. But in your description,
I really don't know how Prabhupada, you know, exactly what he's referring to, but at least the general concept there is sampragyata samadhi. There's some connection with the mind and body. And asampragyata samadhi, there's no connection with the mind and body. I don't understand the part about pleasure. I'd have to think that out. But at least Prabhupada is putting the asampragyata samadhi beyond the sampragyata samadhi. And the Vaishnava conception is different than the yogis. Because for the yogis, you know, when the detachment for the mind comes, they're imbibed in their own nature, but they're not really so cognizant of God. And in the Vaishnav conception, when you become completely detached from the mind and the body, when you're completely detached from the mind and the body, then you're immersed in your relationship with God. And in the higher level of samadhi, then it's not that there are no thoughts, but there are just, you're absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Now, I have to look at Bhakti Sandarbha. I thought that Jiva Goswami said that for the Vaishnavas, the sampragyata samadhi is actually higher.
Hmm.
You know, so Prabhupada actually, when Prabhupada came to America, he had this philosophy book by Chatterjee and Dutt.
Mm-hmm.
He had a philosophy book. It's a very famous philosophy book by two Bengali professors. And Prabhupada specifically had that book to study about yoga. He brought it with him because he knew that yoga may be popular, so to understand that philosophy. So I think from that perspective, Prabhupada's commenting, because in the yoga process, the asampragyata samadhi is the higher meditation when you're no longer connected to the mind. But I believe, I think Prabhupada may have been commenting on that and kind of showing how the higher level was, because there's no connection with the mind, and the connection with the mind in yoga means material. There's no connection to the mind, so that's higher. So Prabhupada was just kind of using that template to describe Vaishnavism. But the conception of samadhi in Vaishnavism is, you know, the mind is just absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. So I'm not sure why Prabhupada said Monday. But one thing for sure, he's saying one is higher than the other, and that's consistent mm-hmm. with the yogic thing. And he's also saying that there's no connection with the mind, which is mm-hmm. also consistent. Okay?
When would the Sambhogata Samadhi be higher than the Asambhogata?
I'd have to look what Jiva Goswami said, because in Vaishnavism, right, the perfection is not stopping the thoughts. The perfection the samadhi is you're thinking all the time about Krishna, and you're laughing, and you're seeing Krishna's pastimes, and all these things are happening. So you're in samadhi in the sense that you forget yourself. You're not cognizant of anything else. But it's hardly a meditating on one thing or mm-hmm. imbibed in just some, mm-hmm. unified conception. It's full of thoughts. Mm-hmm. Your person is, he's not cognizant, but he's laughing, he's joking, he's crying, it's all these emotions. Okay?
Yeah, I had something different.
Okay, one more question.
Yeah,
only 5 minutes because these are the questions. Okay, yeah, what?
Yeah, what? When you were saying that the function of the mind is to discriminate.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is a technicality or not, but normally I've heard you just say that, give that description for the intelligence, that is the function of the intelligence.
Okay, here's the problem, Gail. The term mind is sometimes referred to as the manas, which categorizes things and ascribes feelings to them. But I was using mind in terms of the chitta, the composite of the whole thing.
Yeah, okay, I was thinking you might.
You understand what I'm saying? And actually that does relate more to the buddhi. But mm-hmm. when you look at that whole function of when it says chitta vritti niroda, the chitta is sometimes, and that is referring to the mind, the whole purpose of that is so that the whole thing functions on a level of pure perception. Because there's an idea or conception in Indian philosophy when the fear, anxiety is caused of a lack of perception. You're not seeing things properly. So as one's consciousness becomes elevated, one's level of perception becomes elevated, and one becomes free from anxiety. And the example is given, you see a snake, a rope, and you think it's a snake. So you're suffering, but the basis is your perception is not very good. Mm. So there's a concept that as the mind becomes purified, its perceptual abilities become purified. And one has pure perception, the mind is perfectly reflecting the self. Then one's not in anxiety because the self is eternal, the self is full of knowledge, and the self is full of bliss. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay, anybody else like to say hello? I heard Amiya, I heard Govardhan. This is a smaller class on Wednesday, but it is edifying that people are telling me that they're downloading and listening to them. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay, well then, don't you call Patrubius Chakra, Pasundi, Vijay, Vijay, Pati, Dhan, Pabri, Nimish.